Boss! Boss! Boss!
Welcome in to another edition of At the Buzzer. I am fired up for a reason that will become clear shortly. We are a Colorado Buffaloes podcast hosted by the Ralph Report, your friendly neighborhood news source. I am one of your co-hosts, Jack. Over there is the other one of our co-hosts, Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hello.
And part of the reason we're so fired up is because we also took a bye week. See, you had a bye week last week. We did as well. So we didn't talk to each other. I shut everything down. I was in a dark room for 2 weeks and emerged for this Cal game that happened this past Saturday on the 15th. I'm sure Sam did the same. And that gives us plenty of pent-up energy to talk about. Let's just say it. The next 7-0 team in America.
Yeah, I'm happy. I missed the podcast you did with Chase about the hot board because I was sick and I could not speak for like 5 days.
Yeah.
It was horrible. And then the next week, I thought during the bye week, what is there for us to talk about? There's nothing for us to talk about. Was happening.
I probably could have done 5 more hours on coaching candidates, but.
Yeah, no, but that's that. I wouldn't have. So you would have had a solo episode.
Yes. And what's the show without your vibes?
There has a so I did listen to the podcast. First time I've listened in a long time. And you said that last episode with Chase was not At the Buzzer, which I disagree with because I've done a podcast without you and it was still At the Buzzer.
All right. Well, I mean, our name doesn't really matter. It's all under the Ralph Report banner. Yes. At the Buzzer is
also
what we want to be called, but
also you should. During football season, you and Chase should just do the podcast yourselves.
That's like I said, analysis. What is it without your vibes, dude?
We he's
your
very vibe. Good at this.
Yeah, Chase is a pro. He's the reason he's our most frequented guest. And he knows his stuff. Glad he's still writing for the Action Network a little bit. Maybe I should be writing. I don't know if you've been following my weekly betting column, but I am kicking ass this year.
I have not been reading your articles. Did you read my article today? No, you have not.
Because no,
I've
not.
I'll make you look at it when we get to it.
Okay.
Because I'll bring up the stuff. Okay. What are we doing today?
We are talking about a whole bunch of stuff. It's exciting times, finally, to be a Colorado Buffalo fan. The season has been a walk through the desert. It's been horrendous. It's been terrible. We talked about this week over week over week over week. Because of how bad it was, CU fired their head coach and their defensive coordinator. And this game against Cal, under new head coach, interim head coach, Mike Sanford, and a new defensive coordinator, Gerald Chapman, is our first chance to see what this supposedly renewed team had to offer. And I guess let's just dig right into that game. I was last Saturday, the 15th, was one of those Saturdays in my mind where you're just reminded why you like the sport, like just across the board, all the games that happened this weekend. And I was at the CU Cal game. I was just like, God, this is why you love it. It just made me romantic about the sport. It was just incredible.
Yeah, I was up watching college football on Saturday because it was the best schedule I can remember seeing in terms of games. I was watching the Alabama-Tennessee game. And then at halftime, I was watching the Utah or that game, and I was following the CU score. And I was like, all right, 7-3 at halftime. Like, I see Brian Howell saying Thursday night football carried over to Boulder on Saturday. I thought, I don't really see why this is worth watching. If it's close at the end, I'll watch it. And then I ended up watching the fourth quarter and came, I was very impressed with the energy, let's say that, of CU.
Yes.
And then I rewatched the full game. And so I have seen it.
Yes, you have.
I saw the end of it live. I definitely was not invested emotionally in the game. There was a third and goal and I had to pee and I just wasn't even thinking. I just went to go pee.
Oh my God.
And I didn't even consider it. And I was like, wow, I've really, really checked out on this team. I really didn't mean to do that.
Well,
I have thoughts.
1 in 5, easy to check out on. I want to say the thing I forgot. I thought I was going to say at the very top, and I forgot. So let me say it at near the very top of the episode. Great news that Deion Smith was already walking around and hanging out after the game. I don't know if you saw that play. That was shades of Tedrick Thompson against UCLA his freshman year in 2014 or sophomore year.
I don't
year.
Remember that.
Just a really weird tackle, and he was just down on the ground for a while, carted off, ambulance, like that whole thing. Deion Smith was the same way, where I was just thinking, oh, he's done. Like, that's – it was not pretty, but already walking and talking. Sounds like he's up in the air to even play next week, so.
Yeah, I was about to say, I looked up on this. I followed up on this, too.
Really good news. It seems like it was just a really scary thing for the time, but no – like lingering effects. It's not a Tua situation here. You know, I guess I would feel better personally if he didn't play next week, just for me to feel better. But I'm so great to hear it, basically that he's already good to go. And he's not in a hospital still.
Yeah. No, that great news all around.
Okay. Can I go on my rant now? The other thing I was going to say at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was at the game. So harder for you to be emotionally invested in that game, because I'm sure you watching is just like, oh, it's just two bad teams that are just bad. And okay. Like, yeah. That's not that fun. But I was at the game, and I don't know how many other teams in the country at 0-5 sell out the goddamn stadium with 50,000 people, and there were actually 50,000 people. I was there.
I saw.
It was actually full. And I don't know after that how many of those people stay at for an 0-5 team. How many of those people, like, they were, it was not just like family weekend people talking to their parents in the crowd. Like, they were into the game. There was bullshit chants. There was like constant cheering, legit crowd effects on the false starts for Cal Slide. Like, what I said this at the game, and you know, like I said, this was one of those weekends that just made me feel romantic about the sport and how much I love it. And this is a huge part of it. But also, like, if you're a recruit who is at the game, or if you're a coach looking at the game, that is the ultimate sales pitch for CU, right? Like, if you're a high school senior and you're at that game, you're like, I don't even have to be that good. I don't even have to be mediocre, and they will love me if I'm not horrendous. Like, I will get 50,000 people cheering for me if I'm not just catastrophically bad, right? If the coach isn't catastrophically bad, he's getting carried off and shouldered. It's like, that's literally all it takes. How is that not a great sales pitch? Like, just be fun, just be cool, and we love you. That's all it is. Like, that, it is insane the fan support the CU still has after 15 years of complete trash, really, on the field.
Like, I am.
You know, it was like, oh my God, how can you not want to coach here? Win 6 games, we're building statues for you. You're never paying for a meal again. Like, I don't know. It was just so fun to be there.
I am so impressed with, like, the fan turnout. Like, the students got shat on for so many years for not showing up. And whatever happens, like, the last 3 years, the team is getting worse and worse and worse, and the fans are getting more into it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's going on. I don't get it either.
I mean, I was talking with Ghost of Marv on Twitter, who helped start the C unit.
Ted Chalfin.
Yes, friend of the program, obviously former Ralphie Report contributor. We won his writing back, but like, we were both there. We were both students in, you know, that early Mike McIntyre era, late Mike, you know, that whole thing. Like, we never got this. Like, it took so long in 2016 to get anywhere near a sellout. And we were good. And so, like, I don't understand this. And like, 2017, still, like, there's a floor there that was higher than what we're seeing right now. Like, the play in 2017, we were a better team in 2017 than we are right now. And we never got close to this. Like, on the student side, never got close to this. It is incredible to watch. I still haven't batted tweet something about this, but I think it is something about like a COVID knockback of just like, people realize.
I think so.
That they miss it, like, when they couldn't have it. So we're just seeing all these people show out, and I'm so glad. It was just so fun to be in that stadium.
Yeah, that was fantastic. How was like the atmosphere as the game got started? Like as a kind of a slog.
I mean, atmosphere was, like I said, it was
Yeah.
engaged audience. Like, I mean, if we're going into actual analysis now, CU's offense is still not good, per
Yeah.
se. But I think just the fact that it was close and that CU started off with an interception is probably was probably helped them get into it, right? First, like, second play of the game was an interception. And the Daniel Eilers drop at the beginning of the game was just brutal. Oh my God, that hurt. Wide open. Owen McCown would have started the game with a
Oof.
75-yard touchdown and dropped it. He
Fuck.
made up for some of it, but it was just like,
Yeah.
God damn it. That would have absolutely blown the roof off. And the other thing, I think people also responded to how much energy there was on the sidelines. I've been formulating this thought for a little bit, and I'm gonna run it past you live. See what you think about it. I am very clear here, which is, I guess, going to be mean, but I do not want Mike Sanford to get the permanent job, at least not yet. I think he has to win. I don't think he's still not even in my consideration set. Like, I think CU has to win more than a couple games on the stretch for me to think about him. But for now, he's giving off to me like massive substitute teacher vibes of just like, the kid, like the main teacher's sick. This guy comes in, he's just like, have the candy, who cares? Have fun, let's do it, let's watch a movie. Woo! And like everyone's like really responding to that, like, hell yeah, let's have fun. Like all the it seems to me like it's probably not sustainable long term, but the kids are obviously just having like an absolute blast playing for him. Cause he kind of has the easiest job in the world, is being like, I'm just gonna do the opposite of whatever we're doing before.
Yeah, I was about to say that I
Like,
think he's been the foil to Darrell so far.
yeah.
Of just because Darrell, I mean, did we see him smile on the sideline?
I have massive fights with a bunch of my friends about this because I really
Okay.
don't care about how his behavior is on the sideline. It's like, to me, Darrell's
Yeah, that's
sideline
fine.
behavior is only a sticking point because we're bad. I don't think people care if Darrell
Yeah.
doesn't smile if we're good, right? But
Well, I mean, he just
he
looked.
didn't do anything. Yeah. Every once in a while
Yeah,
you see a little, yeah, but that's, that's, he didn't do much.
but Mike Sanford, like, he definitely is like quote unquote football guy, like
Oh
he's
yeah.
into
He's sprinting down the
it. He
sidelines.
loves this shit.
I mean, he like ran on the field to congratulate Cole Becker after like a 30-yard chip in. You're just like, all right, guy, yeah. Like, yeah, he's bringing the juice. And I have quote unquote sources. I don't really, but I have a few buddies who are in the rooftop portion of the stadium before the game started, which, as you know, is like right above the athletic complex, like the locker rooms. And he said he
Is
could
that where the
hear.
admin watches?
Yeah. Well, no, they watch from the load box. But he said from the rooftop you could hear Mike Sanford's speech in the locker room, like before the game.
Damn.
Like he was going after it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So like they were fired up. And I don't know if you saw Matt McChesney's speech on Tuesday that he gave on pra in practice.
Thought he gave one. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, he put it out on Twitter. I would recommend you watch it. I'm not a, I go back and forth with Matt McChesney. I think he's a great advocate for the university, but that's kind of where I want the involvement to stay. Like some people are like, yeah, let's get him in as DL coach. And I'm like, well, hold on. He's doing more good for us getting high schoolers, like talking to us about talking to high schoolers about us. But his speech, I would watch his speech. It was you're ready to fight someone after that. So people, definitely massive substitute teacher, like this is our week off, let's have fun vibes. And I think that you saw that, like the team was going for it at all times. Like that interception was celebrated with everyone going into the like end zone. People were freaking out after every play. I
The
think
first
that's good
interception
for
or
these
the Nico
kids.
Reed one that didn't
The
count? Because that
first
was a
interception.
fantastic play by Nico, I was gonna
Incredible
say.
play. And
Cool.
then
One-handed diving,
I
basically.
mean, I was getting pissed in the stadium. It seemed like every big play that CU had, and there was that same Owen McCown scramble touchdown.
Yeah, I was
They
about
got
to
caught
mention it.
back for stupid ineligible lineman downfield, which is one of those stupid, boring penalties. You're just like, okay, come on, who cares?
Yeah. Okay, cop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The
And it just felt like every one of those plays, the refs would be like, just kidding, it didn't happen. And you're like,
Yeah,
okay,
so wait,
fine,
it was
guy.
so I did notice there was a good amount of plays that did happen, but not really. Like there was the scramble touchdown to Jordan Dyson you mentioned, the interception by Nico Reed, and then the drop pass by Arias. I could have sworn Cal also had like a pretty big play that didn't count.
Maybe there's a touchdown that's called back for holding, but holding can be real.
Yeah. But I mean, it appeared to be on the surface 7-3 at halftime, whatever. It was an uneventful game, and then I watched it, and I was like, oh no, that was actually a pretty fine game.
Yeah. I mean, what you're seeing is more Owen McCown until he was pulled due to semi injury, but like he is semi injury.
You say?
Well, if you talk, so Stanford after the game said he pulled Owen McCown because he was hurting, but he wanted to play, and Stanford thought a healthy JT Shrout would do better than a injured Owen McCown.
Okay, that's fair.
And I was like, okay, yeah, I kind of get that. We talk about JT Shrout in the end of the game a little bit, but
yeah, we will.
Like, I think McCown obviously has some juice as a freshman quarterback. There's some good stuff there that I like to see. And the same thing with Anthony Hankerson at running back. I think Anthony Hankerson is super fun to watch as a freshman running back. Like that dude. People have talked about Bieniemy comparisons. I don't know if I believe that necessarily. Not just in skill, but like running style. People have talked about where he just like keeps going with those weird tough yards. I definitely see a little bit of like Philip Lindsay. Like, I don't care what you say. I am literally going full speed at this hole every single time. Like, there is no hesitation. He is just like running as hard as he can in the middle of the line. I think that's super fun to watch. So I love that freshman triumvirate of Jordan Tyson, Anthony Hankerson, Owen McCown. I think there's some good stuff there. And then the offensive line. We haven't talked about this because it's been bad. But Jared.
Lichtenhand,
yeah.
Oh.
Like 6'10", 6'10", young guy is like pretty decent at left tackle. Like he's actually like the interior of the line is obviously the strength, but like he's doing not bad. There's something there, especially with his size. Like
I can't say I noticed one way or the other, but that's fine.
One way or the other is fine. If he's anonymous out there, as opposed to like, oh God, he's gonna get beat again. That's you'll take that.
Okay.
Yeah, so 7-3 at halftime, and I think Cal missed a field goal somewhere in there as well.
Cal missed two field goals in there.
Yeah, so you had a touchdown call back, and Cal also had insanely good field position almost the whole game, including in the first half. Like, they were starting every drive from the 30 or 40 because a walk-on punter was just beaming these line drives, and they would get, like, 10 yards of return, 20 yards of return. So I would say great job by the defense holding Cal down.
And I was going to ask.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the defense looks competent, bare minimum competent. Like they allowed a decent amount of plays, but it seems to me, from my perspective, that Cal, their offense is not very good, and their strengths kind of fit. What?
It's terrible.
Okay, yeah, but and the strengths they have, if they have any, kind of fit into CU's strengths on defense. Which is basically that they have their fucking 6 foot tall, 240-pound running back just running into the line, where we do actually have some relative strength on our defensive line.
You could say that, but prior to this game, CU was giving up 200 yards a game on the ground.
But
290 yards of the game on the ground.
I mean, most of that was on like trap plays and like speed type of runs, where these explosive running backs and receivers just have the edge and cut through whatever, like a hot knife through butter. And this seemed more like, oh, I was going to use a food metaphor, but I think that's going to be bad. Cal is not a fast team.
Okay.
They,
yes, like the offense. They are pro-style, pros on offense.
If they're good enough to be a sledgehammer, CU can kind of stop the sledgehammer. They can't stop anything with quickness and speed.
So I'm gonna push back on that. We had no proof that CU could stop anything, period, this year before this game. CU literally had not stopped a single team all year. The closest we got was a half against TCU. Uh-huh. With Chandler Morris, and then that quickly evaporated.
Yeah, we gave them a Khalil Tate situation too, accidentally discovering their better quarterback.
That's exactly right. So I don't want to minimize what CU did by saying like that Cal played to CU's strengths on defense. We had no
Okay. No
proof that
strength.
CU had any strengths on defense. Yeah. So like the fact that what you just said is what we were saying prior to the year starting is like, well, we should be good front seven. But we didn't see that at all this year. And by week, new defensive coordinator, suddenly we see it. I agree with you. But that should still be celebrated. That's like this dude who has never called defense before in his life, Gerald Chapman, he's 34 years old, literally never been a coordinator at any level,
Oh,
somehow
wow.
unlocked it, the ability to be like, oh yeah, we do have good guys. Let's let them be good. And it's like, oh wow, we are. Jaden Ott is really good. He's a really good running back for Cal. He averaged 6.5 yards a carry this year. He's already over
Oh.
500. Like he's really good. And he got 35 yards this year, this game, 47 yards this game. Cal's a team had 35 rushing yards this game. As mentioned before, that is 250 yards less than CU's been given up on average all year. Like, it is incredible the turnaround in 2 weeks that CU had up front. And just look at the TFLs, man. I don't know what CU was averaging TFL wise. I don't think it was that good week over week. But just this game, what did CU have? Close to 10 tackles for a loss and 2 sacks? Like, we were living in that backfield,
Yeah.
dude. Suddenly, Josh Chandler-Smedo doesn't look like a disappointing transfer. Suddenly, he looks like that team captain leading tackler that we all thought he was going to be. 9 tackles this game, 3.5 tackles for a loss, including a sack.
He was
Incredible,
fantastic.
right? Trevor Woods, I will talk about him later when we get to the fourth quarter specifically.
Yes,
Incredible game. Right? Guy Thomas lived in the backfield all game, dude. Terrence Lang was a mammoth. That's exactly what we thought he was going to be in
yeah.
sixth grade, right?
Yeah. Okay,
Like,
so this is the so my issue is that I do think like CU had latent strengths. Like this team wasn't as bad as they've been playing.
right?
So my question was going to be, what is the new DC doing differently than what Chris Wilson was doing?
Yeah, it's all kind of boring stuff. A little more of a
Okay.
3-4 alignment-ish, where it's like Sammy and two big guys, but that's not necessarily
Yeah.
true. It's a lot more linebacker changing things around. So he basically made it less muddy and made it very easy. What would have been maybe called the star position is now called the Joker or whatever you call that position. And that's like Robert Barnes now. So Robert Barnes is no longer a middle linebacker. He is that weird position. And that helped a little bit, but also
That's good.
freshman Aubrey Smith was in there, and I really liked what I saw that guy. So he just made it easier on that second line to just kind of fly around. Like Quinn Perry is basically in the Rick Gamboa role now, which I think is good. Of just like you are in the middle of the field, you are going to destroy anyone who's in the middle of the field. Like that's your job. So I think he just
Which I should be, yeah.
simplified the linebackers' roles. As well as some of the defensive linemen's roles, so they can kind of just pin their ears back and go, which is, whatever. Like people always say fast and aggressive football, but like CU also blitz more than they had the previous 5 weeks combined in this game. I don't know. People were just playing faster because they had less stuff to think about, I think.
That makes a lot of sense from what I saw, especially earlier because it looked like the linebackers in particular were kind of a disaster.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to even use kind of, they were a
No,
disaster
I
in the
mean, how
first
many
five
times
games.
look at back at that Air Force game with Robert Barnes and how he was just abused on the option, like over and over and over
Yeah,
again.
he kept get, he like other games too. He specifically him, he kept getting lost.
Yeah, and not to like, I guess we're singling him out, but it's like that's not
Yeah,
necessarily
I don't
on
want.
him. Like that is obviously a scheme issue because this game that wasn't necessarily happening. Like there was such a massive improvement. Like it was just so clear that the scheme was not fitting our players, and I think we made it easier for them to fit the players.
Yeah, it turns out a simple scheme, I guess. Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going with this, but I understand what you're saying. And
So when you're like, to me, I was just when you're like, hey. Yeah, Cal should have done this because they were playing into their strengths, like playing into CU's strengths. So, of course, and in my mind, I'm like, yeah, before the season, I agree with you totally. That's exactly what I thought this game might be. But, like, Dude, we were seeing literally the worst defense in the country for the last 5 weeks. Like, really bad. Really, really bad. So, like, the fact that we are now where we should have been is huge. And, like, not necessarily just for this year, because, CU season's over, but, like, for next year, just
No, we can
showing.
make a bowl.
That's right. That would be a Mike Sanford hire him immediately thing if CU made a bowl, obviously. But,
Yeah, probably for good reason too.
like, just the fact that we can show that there is, in fact, like, we don't have no talent, right? There is talent here that we can build on. And that's what I saw on defense. So I don't want to keep going in on it, but yeah.
Okay. Oh, what? Okay, so I just have a loose collection of notes.
Okay.
I wrote great trick play. Nice throw by
Yeah.
Tyson.
Double pass and the little jump pass too. He set his feet and went, eh! He went hard. And
Yeah.
Montana Lemoine is Craig. Woo!
That was a great catch. And then it said, is Dion okay? Yes, I think so.
Yes.
We covered that.
Yes.
And then I said Trout with some big boy throws. Where
Yes.
do you want to take a stab at?
Let's do the Shroud. Let's talk about Shroud coming in as a backup. And like you said, making some big board throws. So you watched some of the fourth quarter drives then.
Yeah, I watched them all.
So new offensive coordinator too, so the offense looked a little bit different. Still not great, but a little different. Yeah, there were three straight throws watching back that game in the drive where CU, I think, scored their touchdown that were like, oh, that's why JT Shroud was a high recruit. Like they were crazy. And they weren't like it wasn't crazy reads, but there was one JT Shroud rollout where he whipped it to Daniel Arias 20 yards down the field. Daniel
Yeah.
Arias just steps up. Do you remember that throw?
Yeah, I
And
remember that
like
throw.
that ball
That was the one
was
I thought of, like,
singing.
God damn, okay.
Yeah, like that ball was going, man. And then the very next play, right? Simple throw, but we have not been able to do the simple shit this year. Like, grabs the ball, immediate screen pass throw out to Lamonius Craig, right? It's one of those screen passes where he doesn't have to wait and catch it. Like, he can move slightly up, so his momentum's already going as he catches it. Got Lamonius Craig gets 10 tough yards, easy first down, right? Like,
Yeah, like
okay.
that type of stuff we just don't do the
Right,
last
exactly.
3, 4 years.
Exactly. Like, oh, look how easy that was. Pitch and catch. JT Shroud just goes whoop, and then he catches it and he goes, right? Get the ball to your best players. Simple. Haven't been able to do that. And then the next one to Lamonius Craig is the one I'm like, that is an NFL throw. Zone coverage, Lamonius Craig, classic post route, your Madden 05, hole X bullet pass,
Oh, yeah.
20 yards downfield, in between three zone players. Lamonius Craig finds the zone and JT Shroud throws an absolute bullet, right? Like Montana catches that and goes 2 yards back because of how hard that ball was. Do you remember that throw I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Just a classic post, and he just whoa, and you're like, holy shit. If he can be that accurate all the time, which there's a reason he's at CU, it's not because he's that accurate all the time. But like if he can do that, oh my God, like that is an incredible throw. Yeah,
Is
I yeah.
he only going to be a relief pitcher? Like, why is he good off the bench and not good when he starts? Well, okay.
We don't know. Like this game is
Yeah.
so weird because it's like, oh, it's so obvious that the last 5 weeks there was just a disconnect with what our head coach wanted to do and what the players wanted to do. Like there's just something that didn't work. And this game showed that you don't have to be a genius to make it easier for them to work together. So like we'll see if McCown starts this next week, depending on how banged up he is, but
I will say, like, okay, I don't want to be a hater because it's a true freshman quarterback. But
Yeah.
everyone's really excited about him. I don't really get it. I think he's fine. I think that he's done some plays where I'm very impressed by it. Like there was a like where he is fighting for yards and he's willing to take a hit and like he stood like there was a play in the first half where he just got nailed as he threw a pass to
Yeah.
Daniel Arias.
Yeah. I think that's
And
where
then
he
the
got hurt, by the
critique.
way.
Oh, okay. And then the critique would be like, yeah, I mean that's a very tough throw, but he also underthrew Arias pretty bad, and it probably would have been a touchdown if it was not an underthrow. But like I just kind of see like I don't really think he has great arm strength, and I don't think he's quite mobile enough to make it work. Like he feels like a middle ground between what Lewis is good at, what Trout's good at, and I don't know if that's a good quarterback.
I think he's, I mean, for a true freshman, I'm really excited at what I'm seeing. But I also, to your point, was excited about what I saw from Brendan Lewis. I'm kind of upset we don't get to see a Carl Durrell-less Brendan Lewis.
We will when he transfers next year.
That's right. So, like you said, people jump down Brendan Lewis's throat a lot. And I don't think Brendan Lewis is the best quarterback on this team anymore. Unfortunately, I think we're wrong about that. I was wrong on that.
I agree with that.
I'll wear that shirt. But tell me this isn't a Brendan Lewis stat line.
Print the shirts. I was wrong about Brendan Lewis.
Tell me this isn't a classic Carl Durrell B. Lou stat line. 13 for 21, 61% completion percentage, 104 yards. Average yards of attempt, 2.8, zero TDs, one interception.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Right, exactly. So for some reason, McCown is getting a lot of breaks that Brendan Lewis didn't, and maybe it's just because of the age thing, right? I think freshman year Brendan Lewis, maybe he did get those breaks, but like...
He did not, because he played one game.
I think this also... I think McCown also chucks it downfield more. He might miss those throws, but he does throw it downfield a lot. I don't know. We'll see. I think there is something there. I think this is a freshman you can build off of. Kind of like Sefo in 2013, where it's like, there's definitely a lot of roughness around the edges, but we like what you're seeing. We like what we're seeing here.
Yeah. I guess the issue is that I think, like, if you want to do a comparison of what Sefo is and what McCown is that Sefo is, what, like 40 pounds heavier?
Yeah, McCown is skinny.
Yeah, he's small. He's skinny. He's...
I think he's a good runner, though. Like, I think you're underrating
his running. Good runner. I think I am. He's fine. Like, he's good with mobility. I don't think he has great arms talent or arm accuracy, really. He just strikes me as someone who has a pretty low ceiling. But I guess we don't really get to choose if our promising freshman quarterback sticks around. Like, even if he has low ceiling and just moves the chains a bit, I don't really see much.
I think it depends on the hire. And we have to also remember Cal is good at defense. So we'll see how the rest of the year looks. But like, if there's one thing Cal can do, it's defend the pass. That's just been true under Justin Wilcox for 6 years. So he was not going up against like an Air Force or even a TCU in terms of pass defense. So. And I once again want to shout out Montana Lamonius Craig. 8 catches, 120 yards, and one of the most insane touchdowns I've seen in Folsom Field in a long time.
Okay, yeah. Do you want to just get right into the end?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so first of all, Samito Chandler. Thankfully, Chandler Samito, sorry. Thankfully, CU held tough and forced him to a field goal because I was thinking, damn, if only Chandler Samito wasn't 5'10".
I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. Jack Plummer threw right over him and he tried to grab it. Yeah.
With a little tiny arm. So thankfully we forced a field goal there. I like really cannot commend the defense enough for playing so well today. And Nico Reed, fantastic. Just so good.
And Kalen Moore. I still love Kalen Moore.
And I would be honest, I didn't say his name because I forgot it when I was trying to
compliment
these players. Yeah.
Also, where the hell did Cal find like a million receivers that are 6'5" or taller? Every single one of Cal's receivers are like massive. It's insane.
Well, they've always had them.
I guess. Yeah. Like that third Avant guy is so big.
Yeah, he looks like Quentin Johnson, the TCU guy. Also, does every team we play have massive receivers?
Oregon State does. USC does. I don't know about Oregon. Utah, kind of. I mean, Dalton Kincaid at tight end is huge.
Uh-huh.
Washington.
All right. So
ASU
overtime. Now. Overtime, yes. So 3rd and 7, Shrout drops back and just kind of chucks it to Montana Lamonius Craig on a wheel route.
And this is
fan route, whatever.
This is not a need to score scenario, right? This is a CU had the ball first, Cal's defending first. Yeah. So CU is setting the pace here. Third and seven after a tough penalty that puts CU back. I remember once again, I think there's a long gain that was nullified by a hold.
Yeah.
If I remember right.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Okay, so Montana goes back. He jumps. And then as he's catching it, his back foot is coming up, and then he falls out of bounds. And then you see the replay, and his back foot is just barely touching when he appears to have both hands on the ball. And it's like the Bryce Bobo catch against Oregon.
Yeah.
Originally ruled incomplete, and then you see it. And then right as Bobo palmed that ball one-handed, his foot was still just barely touching.
It was literally like two frames where the ball was there and the foot was down.
Yeah. Not a very common catch. Like,
no.
You don't see it very often.
Montana was incredible all game, but yeah.
Yes, he wasn't incredible. But I hate to just be the one kind of shitting on CU all day. Was that a catch?
Dude, come on.
Yes. I'm just asking.
Yes, okay, absolutely.
Ryan Howell. He shared a video on Twitter from the other angle, and it doesn't look like Montana had control when he got both feet on it, or both hands on it.
Guess how? Do you know how like little I care about?
I know.
This is why you play at home. This is why you play home games. It's so that is a catch, even if it isn't a catch.
Okay.
I think it was a catch, but even if it isn't, come on. Okay.
He got two hands on it, and then as he's pulling it down, he kind of loses it and recatches it. But I'm not going to be a cop about that. I don't really care.
It's a catch.
I will say, do you see my hand?
Yes.
Do you see my pinky?
Yes.
Okay, it looks bad, right?
It looks bad. Sam is holding up his hand and his pinky is jammed.
No, it's not jammed. It got hyperextended because I was playing flag football because I joined a team and I went to moss somebody. And then as I jumped up over them and was catching the ball, he like yanked down on my hands. And then my finger bent back.
Ouch.
I dropped it because he fucking... I'm so upset. Okay, so Cal gets the ball. Apparently throw a touchdown pass in the back. And then Trevor Woods puts on his little superhero cape.
One of the weirdest... Yeah.
And it flies out of nowhere and just kind of pops the ball out.
Yeah,
and it could have been picked off. It was just weird.
It was one of the weirdest plays I can remember seeing on the defense. It was like you said. So this was to tie it up in overtime. Cal is driving. We still want them. I think it's third and goal. Yes,
was it third and goal? I don't think it was third and goal yet.
Okay. Well, it was not fourth. And one of Cal's massive receivers finds himself wide open in the middle of the end zone after a long play. Jack Plummer throws a dime. And the guy was trying to do one of those cool things where you just stand still and you just catch the ball and you're like, haha, no one's around me. You know, like, don't overthink it. You know, one of those cool deals. But he stood still so long and Jack Plummer lofted it so hard that Trevor Woods could just, like you said, Superman out of the corner of the end zone. And the guy had the ball, but as he's bringing it in, Trevor Woods just... like pops the ball with his fist exactly like it was like perfect time. It was so heroic. It was so weird and heroic. It was like incredible. And then I thought we could maybe catch it off the intercepted off the bounce, but didn't end up happening. It was just like, what a crazy, weird pass breakup and great instincts from Trevor Woods. I've talked about him all year. Longtime listeners know, I think he's the best player on the team. He played a great game today. Or on Saturday.
I mean, today was a great day for my breakout stars picks. I picked Trevor as the obvious pick. Everybody picked Trevor and the Montana.
Yeah, great day for you. So, yeah, I don't know. It was a weird game-saving play. And then Cal's offense kind of sputtered until the fourth and goal, which I was terrified at because on the fourth and goal, Plummer hit the tight end right on the numbers. Like, that was a great pass. And then through a pass breakup or a drop or whatever, Cal ends up not converting. Game over. Field rush!
Yeah. Yeah. Did you rush?
Yeah. Slowly, but yes.
When was that? Slowly? Did you see the video of the refs? Wait,
No.
no, that was Tennessee. That was the Tennessee game. The refs in the Tennessee game, they were waiting in the game-winning field goal, and they did the thing. And then they both just looked at each other and they started running to get off the field. But the thing was, is that they should have run backwards to the tunnel, and instead they just kind of ran towards the middle of the field, and then they
Oh
got kind of
no.
caught in the rush.
Oh no.
It was so funny to see those things.
Yeah,
But yes,
yeah.
so I love that CU rushed the field after beating a 3-2 team that's not very good. I think it's so funny that we just do this historically as a program. We rushed the field against Arizona that year. Laying it off for you, please.
I mean, see, you should always rush the field. I think it would be fun tradition if CU rushed the field even after they lost. Just make the opponent team
Yeah.
scared about how fast our students are. I loved it. I love that we did it. I don't understand why people could be upset about it. I guess if you're like, we used to rush when it mattered. It's like, dude, we are
It
still in
matters.
survival
It
mode.
matters.
Yeah. Everyone who rushed that field is a better fan for, like, they like CU more after they did it, right? Like, that's really what we're going for here is like every student that was on that field, and I have a video of everyone just like, it was crazy, like, 3,000 students just bouncing up and down with all this, the football players. Like, all those people have better memories of the football team after this year. Like, absolutely give it to them after what they endured. They were full for TCU, they were full for UCLA. Like, students have done their job. Let them have as much fun as possible. Absolutely do it. And you have all those great videos of Mike Sanford kissing babies and shaking hands, and bunch of young kids got their autograph. Like, it's great. It's what college football is, man. Let's just be romantic. Like, it's this part of why I love this weekend is like, yeah, Tennessee, undefeated Tennessee, number six Tennessee beat number three Alabama. They rush the field, incredible environment. Blasting Rocky Top, they carry the goalposts and throw them in the river. Like, that's awesome, right? High
Perfect game.
stakes college football, incredible game. And at the same time, you have a massive group of people who are just as excited to be 1-5 and beat a 3-3 Cal team. Like, that's so cool. Like, that's the cool part about it. That does not happen in other sports. Maybe college basketball, but not other sports. Like, NFL doesn't have that. Like, that's it's just the regionality and just the different fan bases. It's I love that. Every time rush the field, every time.
Okay, moving forward.
Yes. Is this me again? Am I going again? Are you, what are you doing?
No. I'm
Ready?
thinking. I'm trying to ask a question. We kind of already talked about Mike Sanford. I'm trying to wonder where do we go from here?
Well, directly to Oregon State, which is a disgustingly like good team on both sides of the ball. Like, they're just so solid. It's hard
And well
to imagine
coached.
that's a win. CU is a 22-point underdog in that game
Ooh,
in
okay.
Corvallis. For reference, CU was a 15-point underdog to Cal at home and won outright. So I guess not out of the realm of possibility. But yeah, they are going to be tough. I don't think that's a win. I think CU realistically has one more win left on the schedule, and that is Arizona State at home for Holo Weekend. We'll see if that happens. I hope it happens. They are obviously rudderless, also interim coached. They have pretty good talent, but not anything that's that scared of. And they're in the same boat. So it's really, I think that's the last good chance at a win. And then November is just going to be,
Yeah,
I mean.
it's a
If you watch
hellscape.
that Utah USC game, CU plays both of those teams. So, wow.
Plus Oregon, plus Washington, is that it?
Yeah. And Washington
Okay,
might
that'll
score a million points on CU.
be fun.
Yeah, it's so it, the rest of the year is this, but that's why you make the change before the bye week, right? You have a bye week winnable opponent. That's why you do that, is to get something in. And now we know CU is not going defeated. So Washington is still the only Pac-12 team that's ever gone 0-12 in a season. We
Good.
know that this everyone had fun that like regardless of whether or not the rest of the season is good, October 15th was fun for everyone. Like, fans had a good time. That's one of the most fun games I've had in Folsom in like period. It was just a fun atmosphere. It was great. And it was like one of those things that's going to keep you coming back, right? No matter what happens the rest of the year, games like that keep you coming back. Players needed that, absolutely needed that. Like, we just spent a little bit shitting on some of these players, but like, they had a tough year. Like, obviously, they don't want to do anything that they were like, they don't want to lose by 30, of course. So, like, I'm so glad that they got a win and got to have fun with the students and fans. And like, they needed that game, man. Like, you could see how much pent up energy was just released. So, that helps them stick around, whatever happens the rest of the year and coaching wise. Like, yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's pretty the rest of the year, but it doesn't matter, in my opinion.
Are we going to be a vibes team? Or are we on vibes watch?
We're on vibes watch. Absolutely, we're on vibes watch. CU is currently eighth in conference. We're ahead of Washington State, technically, in conference. So,
all right.
You know, somehow turn that into – if we somehow get two conference wins by beating ASU, hey, man, we've done worse since the McIntyre years. So, yeah. I think the last football note I have is a coaching hot list update.
Okay, what's that update? Is it Matt Rhule? Because I don't want to talk about Matt Rhule.
No, it's not Matt Rhule. He's not on my list. But yeah, let's go through some stock stuff. So we have a hot board releasing soon, like a text version. We did the podcast, as you mentioned, that got some pretty good hits. And I like what a lot of what Chase and I talked through. We talked to a bunch of names, some of which have taken themselves out of the running. So let's go through this really quick. My number one is still solidified as Bronco Mendenhall. That is my number one option.
So I listened to this podcast and I will have thoughts, actually. Bronco, you guys both sold me on Bronco.
Yeah.
Especially the part with him being kind of a weird dude.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
I think I was thinking, like, I felt like I've said these thoughts before because I was listening to you guys do the podcast and I had my thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird to like, because you always do this when you're listening to podcasts, but then to actually be able to contribute and say your thoughts, it's kind of a weird thing.
We listen to the podcast and you're like talking with yourself with them and now you're like, I can actually just do it.
Because when you said at first, like, I don't know if like him being Mormon will be a good thing in Boulder or something like that. They're like, it doesn't like it's. I kind of put it in a bad way, but that's kind of the gist of it. My thought was, no. I want the Polynesians. We need the big boys.
And
so I would actually like. And the thing you said with McCartney is when there was like, however you feel about kind of religious conservative folks, it can work in Boulder.
Right, Bill McCartney was not your average Boulder. In terms of, or Boulder resident in terms of views, and it didn't matter because he was a good citizen and he won games, right?
Yeah.
It was still controversial. There's still people that were upset, but like by and large, as long as you fit within the community, regardless of your views, you are good. And I think Bronco is a good fit. But I guess before I go through my stock report, you listen to that whole podcast. Give me your top three then.
No, I will give you my thoughts as you go through the updates because I don't remember.
Okay. Bronco's the number one. Obviously, no change there. He's retired, right? So he's not playing these games week over week. Let's go over guys who I think have played themselves out of my list. I think Sean Lewis at Kent State, the head coach at Kent State, is no longer on my list. Young, obviously going to take lumps, but has lost to Miami of Ohio and Toledo in back-to-back weeks. And if you are a G5 coach trying to make the move, even if you are technically on a talent deficit, which they aren't for at least Miami of Ohio, you got to win those games, man. Like, Kent State's going to have a pretty rough record this year because they play the hardest non-con and then they're losing these conference games.
Their non-con is fucking terrible.
Right, but that's supposed to prepare you to then beat up on the MAC. And this is not a good year for the MAC. The MAC is not good this year. So, Sean Lewis not being able to win there is rough. Marcus Arroyo was never on my list, but some people liked him as the UNLV head coach. Nope. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Got destroyed by Air Force at home. No can do. I've already seen that.
Troy Calhoun off my list. Get his name out of there.
Yes, was never on my list, but definitely, of course, like the lazy national writers, like, just get the guy who wins down the road. Some other ones. Brent Brennan lost to Fresno State, the San Jose State head coach, lost to Fresno State, 1-2-4 Fresno State. No can do. You are off my list. Mountain West is disgustingly bad this year. If you can't beat another bad Mountain West team, no.
Could we? Yes.
Kurt Cignetti, James Madison. A lot of people have talked about him, including Ryan Konigsberg, our friend Ryan Konigsberg at DNVR Buffs, as like the guy, right? Recruited at Alabama, program builder, AP top 25 ranked to James Madison.
Yeah, why would he come to see you?
For the money. But I there's a few big downsides there to me. I don't think he's a great fit. Number one, he's 63, 62. That's pretty old. He is a East Coast lifer.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Pretty old to completely uproot. I think he likes what he's doing in James Madison. James Madison just lost to Georgia Southern. Shout out Clay Helton. Yeah, I don't know. It was a nail biter, but still, it's like,
no, they beat Nebraska too.
Yes, they did. Hire Clay Helton.
Hire Clay Helton. Okay.
Yeah, so some candidate stocks there. Now, people who I think did great this week, and I'm going to tell you about a specific game that everyone needs to look at.
Let me look at the Old Dominion box score.
Hey, that's where I was going. You know I love him. Ricky Ronnie, Old Dominion, knocked off Coastal Carolina, heavy favorite Coastal Carolina, and ran them out their own building. 49-21, Old Dominion. Oh, and Old Dominion had 400 rushing yards. They just ran it down their goddamn throat. Ricky Ronnie doing what he do. If he finishes this year well, he is absolutely shooting up the top of my list. Speaking of that, there is a game in November 26th, the last week of the season, that I'm calling the potential CU Coach Bowl, right? So there are two teams in the Sun Belt, I guess three if you count James Madison, that CU
– I would definitely count them in the Sun Belt because they're in the Sun Belt.
Okay, well, there you go. So Old Dominion, I don't think, plays James Madison this year. But November 26th, two coaches you should keep an eye on for CU that are playing each other. Ricky Ronnie destroyed Coastal Carolina. If Old Dominion is already bowling at that point, he's going to be up there. The other one is the University of South Alabama. Yeah. Do you know their record this year?
No, I should have cheated to find out first.
What? They are 5-1 this year. Their one loss was a one-point game to UCLA at UCLA. And they lost that because they missed a field goal.
Yeah, is UCLA good? I cannot tell.
Also, I think I lied to you.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
I don't see any losses.
No, they're 5-1. They're 5-1. Yes, UCLA is good this year.
Okay.
So, South Alabama, coached by a guy named Kane Womack. Put this guy on your list. Also super young. He is 35, I think, or 36. He was the defensive coordinator at Indiana back when Indiana had the miracle year in 2020. If you remember that.
Oh, yeah. I remember that year.
Yeah. So Kane Womack's a defensive guy. Before Indiana, he was a South Alabama defensive coordinator for 2 years. He was at Eastern Illinois, and then he was a GA for Ole Miss under some of the Hugh Freeze era stuff. But young guy, program builder, defensive side of the ball. Watch out. November 26th, Old Dominion versus South Alabama. That is a potential CU coach matchup right there.
I do want to say that there's a coach on everyone's list that I don't want on there. Yeah. Ryan Walters. I don't want him.
I agree.
A head coach.
He did well. He's still doing well. Yeah. Number one defense in the country. But I agree
with you. I'd like to see him thrive somewhere else. I don't want him to, like, if you love him, set him free. Let him be somewhere else. Josh Heupel is doing great at Tennessee, Oklahoma. Set him free.
Yeah, so I'll get to that in a sec, but he did also well for himself this week. Illinois just demolished Minnesota, especially on defense. Another guy did well for himself this week is Jeff Grimes, offensive coordinator at Baylor. He's going to be on everyone's list as well. They scored 40 points with a backup quarterback on the road in West Virginia. West Virginia isn't great, but still, 40 points good. Is 40 points with a backup quarterback.
Illinois' leading rusher has 1,000 yards right now.
Yeah, he ran the ball 41 times against Minnesota.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so Jeff Grimes, another big name that did well for himself, would be totally fine with Jeff Grimes hire. I think I would be totally happy with that.
Didn't see you say though that they're pretty much leaning towards just getting a head coach.
They haven't said anything publicly about that, but reading between the lines of what he said he wanted, you get the sense they want someone who's done something like this before. Some other names, Jeff Traylor continues to win at UTSA. That buyout's going to be an issue, but He's a winner. We like winners.
Did Tom Herman have a good day in the booth?
I did not watch Tom Herman. But yeah, there you go. Chris Pearson did. If you want to talk about a stretch goal for CU, just bringing back Chris Pearson.
No, I don't want to. I mean, I'll make the exception for Bronco because he's still young and apparently retired because, as you said, to re-fall in love with his wife after having an empty nest. That's hilarious.
And there's there's some rumors too that part of that was he retired after he basically found out that UVA's boosters weren't going to help him build new facilities at UVA. Oh. So he's okay. Like, all right, well, if we're not going to be able to do that, that's some rumors on the UVA side because they are now UVA is now very discontented because Tony Elliott as a hire has not worked out. So they're kind of like being like, oh, what did we have?
Yeah, I tend to believe these types of rumors. Because even if they're not true, they hint at something.
Yeah, there's also a rumor that he retired because he wouldn't fire the defensive coordinator that they had, which was awful. But I don't – so there's a bunch of stuff going around there.
Okay.
So, yeah, now that was my stock report. Trending way up is Ricky Ronnie and Kane Womack. Trending down is Sean Lewis. Holding steady, Bronco Mendenhall, Jeff Grimes, Jeff Traylor. Yeah. Any – now give me your top three.
Well, I can't remember everybody off the top of my head. I need you to write this article. Oh, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go into dashboard.
There you go.
And I'm going to find the article.
Yeah, look at those names. Look at those names. There's nine names. I took Troy Calhoun off the name list. So while we're doing this, I'll vamp for time and talk about why I agree with you. Ryan Walters isn't the move. He's also 36, but he's also never been a head coach before. And just what he's going to be walking into is like a 2-10 team, 3-9 team, whatever you want to say. A lot of talent leaving. Like Terrence Lang is leaving. He has to leave, graduated. Chandler Semedo is leaving. Like, it's going to be a full rebuild for CU, right? You're going to have to get a lot of talent in right away. You're going to have to know what you want the culture to be right away. You're going to have to recruit to something right away. And I think Ryan Walters is a really good coach, and I think he will be a really good head coach, but I don't think he's right for this job at this time, and I don't want to burn that alumni bridge now. He's obviously a super hot name, but like, if he comes in here and he's just not ready because he's young and doesn't exactly know what he needs to recruit to, and he goes 2-10, 3-9, 4-8, and people are pissed, it's like, it's just not worth it. It's much better to have him in the back of your head as an option later. Say he goes from Illinois to, like, you know, what, like maybe Jason Candle gets a job and Ryan Walters takes over Toledo or something. Like, let him do that for a while and build that up. Less stress, no alumni pressure. Like, let him be himself for a little bit and know what he wants. And then he can be CU's pie in the sky alum candidate like Eric Bieniemy is now, right?
Did we fuck up by having Eric Bieniemy as the offensive coordinator?
In 2012? I mean,
obviously he was terrible, but like...
Yes, like absolutely. Did
we burned that bridge too early.
And same with John Emery, man. Obviously John Emery was just not ready. Like, and thinking of John Emery, say you stay in the NFL and with a tight ends coach or whatever, and you think of him like, oh, let's give him an OC gig at CU first or whatever. Like, yeah, that whole staff was just like... you know, foisted on it. It was a mess. That was a mess.
And then they busted out, and their uniforms were the 20-year anniversary of the national championship.
Yeah.
So much nostalgia on that team.
Okay, you look at the dashboard. You saw your names. Give me a three.
I don't know how to feel about Tom Herman. So my issue is I tend to not want retreads, but sometimes they can be fine. Especially if he's someone who's built programs in the past and he wasn't a good fit at Texas. So I think he's outside my top three, but he could be in. Mendenhall would be my number one. I think you've sold me on Ricky Ronnie. And then you sold me previously on Jay Hill.
Yeah, another huge win. They won by 50, I think, against a really bad Big Sky team. They are number five in the country.
I like the idea, not of someone who's an alum, but someone who works within the region of Colorado, who can build a program from the ground up with the limitations of Colorado, basically.
Yep, I agree.
And I don't necessarily want guys who are going to be great recruiters and be charismatic. Like, obviously, I would like that, but that's not a priority for me. And this is kind of what I said with Carl Durrell, is that I'm okay if the recruiting is underwhelming, if he coaches them up like a type of Bill Snyder type of vibe. But that just didn't happen. The coaching up didn't happen.
Yeah, and to be fair, Ricky Ronnie is going to be your CEO recruiter type. Like, that dude is relentless recruiting. But he's also obviously like a culture guy. Like, he is.
Oh, I see. You even included this in the thing. I won't say what, but yeah, he has some good recruits.
So, fun times. There's your stock report. Mendenhall's still my number one. And like I said, November 26th, South Alabama, Old Dominion, CU Bowl. Let's really quickly pivot because I'm running out of time here.
You're running out of time because we got basketball stuff left.
That's what I'm saying. We got to pivot.
Oh, okay.
So CU also had an inter-squad scrimmage before the Cal game that Tap Oil puts on every year. I was not able to make it, but through our boy Ben Burrows, who did a nice recap on Twitter, who was at the scrimmage, and also our friend Adam Munster Tiger at Inside the Herd 247, who did a nice recap. We got to hear a little bit about it. It started out as starters on backups. Then we switched up the teams a little bit. Your starters look to be KJ Simpson, Tristan Da Silva, Lawson Lovering, Nick Clifford, and I think Ethan Wright was the starters.
Ethan Wright. Okay. Interesting.
And so I won't go through the play by play, but it sounds like everyone definitely took advantage of the strength and conditioning. Sounds like KJ Simpson's bigger and Lovering is bigger. Lovering is still missing.
Good. Oh, Lovering's
bunnies.
Bigger?
Yeah. Sounds like he's still missing some bunnies around the rim. Sounds like it was a tough shooting day for a lot of people. KJ Simpson was the main offensive engine on both sides. Sounds like Javon Ruffin left with an ankle injury, but didn't seem serious. But he was also the best defender, perimeter defender, I guess, Ruffin was. And sounds like Quincy Allen is more passive than people would have liked. And same with Da Silva. So, and Jalen Gabadon, the other transfer, was another good defender who displayed leadership. But, overall, kind of what you expected of KJ Simpson being the engine, and some up and down performances across the board the rest of the way with some freshmen showing out, some freshmen not showing out.
Okay, and we don't have very many freshmen. So which freshmen were those?
I say freshmen, I mean redshirt freshmen, like Javon Ruffin and Quincy Allen. I'm counting as freshmen.
Oh, got it. Okay. Any word on Hurlburt?
Played. I think he was also not doing much.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Sounds like he's going to be a while.
Okay. I mean, I like the to know kind of the vague starting five. Who am I missing? I'm missing someone. Fuck. Okay. So Julian Hammond would drop to the bench. I was wondering if they would think about KJ and Hammond together as a starter.
Tad said they will play them together. So I don't know if they start together, but they will be playing together. And he loves Hammond, dude. You can tell Tab Oil loves Hammond.
Yeah, no, I gathered that from what he said too. And Ethan Wright is bigger. He's a better shooter, and he offers a lot on the defensive rebounding.
Yeah, I think the main thing that Ethan Wright does is compared to Hammond is rebound. And that's what Tad's going to go for.
He's bigger on defense and just generally more experienced. So that would make sense as a starter, like where he doesn't necessarily play starter minutes, but like is a good role player with Hammond coming in. That makes sense to me. Lovering at center, I think that if he starts, that's a good sign for his development. If Tad trusts him to start.
I mean, Tad loves him too. And he said the same thing since Lovering's been here, just like he needs to stop getting he said it's a double-edged sword. He's so hard on himself, so he's really coachable. Like he wants to be better really bad, but he also lets that snowball into a second mistake, third mistake, because he so badly wants to like make up for it. And it sounds like he still needs to work around his on his touch around the rim, but definitely bigger. He said way bigger in the upper half, I think, which is good to hear. So I still think he can move well. Lovering, I think, has a chance to be the best defensive center CU's had in a long, long time. So
that's what David Harrison
shows off. Probably, yeah. That's all I have on that scrimmage. Glad to hear that KJ can shoot a little better too. He sounds like he was popping off from the 3-point line. So
good.
This is his
okay. Team. And then I have my piece. So I have the Buffs and the NBA. I can do
I read this.
Oh, did you see the list at the end?
I did.
Okay.
I like that.
It took me a while to find everybody, and there are some players who we could not find. Like Trayshawn Fletcher, I think he got injured because he was playing in Belgium last year. Did well, but he's not playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he got hurt.
Is Corey Higgins finally retired?
Oh, fuck. No, I just forgot him. No, he's the best. He's probably the best. He's very good.
He is up there for one of the best pro careers for a CU player, period.
Yeah. No, I messed up. He's literally like a starter on the best team in Europe. Like one of the five best teams. And he's doing very well. Yeah, 10 points a game is very good in Europe because, like, they don't play that much. 22 minutes a game.
Just to summarize your article here, McKinley Wright.
No, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so McKinley Wright, I got sidetracked real hard. McKinley Wright is on a two-way contract with the Mavericks. That's good. We didn't know. Like, he was on kind of a preseason deal, and that means he was impressive enough. And the Mavericks are pretty good at developing undersized guards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could say a lot of that was Rick Carlisle, but he'll have the opportunity because, like, their guard rotation, besides Luka and Spencer Dinwiddie, who was also there, it's not very good. It's pretty much Frank Ntilikina, Tyler Dorsey,
Tyler Facundo Dorsey. Who, they just signed Facundo Campazzo.
Oh, so that's a much worse player than McKinley Wright.
I agree.
I love Campazzo, and he sucks.
I agree.
He should go back to
Europe. Think it's just that Real Madrid connection, right?
Yeah.
Luka and Facundo.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. And Tyler Dorsey has been playing in Turkey for a while, and he's actually become a pretty good player. So, but the rotation, like the he could, McKinley could find a way. Dinwiddie's on the Mavericks. We know he could be a sixth man of the year contender.
$100 million man, huh?
No, he's not $100 million. Oh, I didn't make that very clear. Brunson had the $100 million deal.
Oh,
Dinwiddie's okay. On a three-year, $34 million deal, second year of that.
Okay.
So he's trying to stay healthy. He's trying to be consistent. He'll play a lot on the ball as a pick-and-roll guy. Derek White is going to be a starter on the Celtics, at least for now.
Love that.
He might get squeezed a little bit because they brought in Malcolm Brogdon and they kind of play the same position, him, Smart, and Brogdon. But the Celtics are going to be playing a lot of small ball, so they'll probably have Derek White play quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Jabari Walker is on a standard contract with the Blazers. I've talked about this a lot, that he was so good at Summer League.
Yeah.
And in preseason, he's been really good. Like, the Blazers just love him.
I don't understand how he dropped so far in the draft, but whatever.
I understand it. In the sense that he's good at things people don't value.
Well, they should probably value them then, is what I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Like, people go for upside rather than people who are just going to be role players for 12 years. Like, I would love to draft Amir Johnson in the early second round of a draft. Alec Burks is still around. Jariah Horn is hanging around.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Yeah. He'll probably be in the G League.
He was in town for a
good for him.
I think the UCLA game. He came back.
Yeah. Okay. So that is okay. So Jariah, Alec, that's two, Jabari, Derek White, Spencer, and McKinley. Okay, so that's six NBA players this year, which is pretty good.
Yep. Two coaches.
Yeah, Jariah will probably be the only G Leaguer because the longtime G Leaguers have left the G League. Mostly George King. He went to the NBL.
Hell yeah.
Deshaun Schwartz probably could have been in the G League, but he went to Turkey. He's on the best team in Turkey, which is probably the second or third best league in the world. Andre Robertson is also, he's not going to be around. I think he's retiring.
He's earned it.
Yeah. I mean, if you tear your patella tendon, that's like no one has ever come back from that injury. Like literally not one person. But yeah, and then the two head coaches, Chauncey Billups and Jamal Mosley. Billups has the Blazers, which will be kind of a tough coaching job because there's kind of a lot of pressure on him to win. And they're going to be, the Blazers are possibly selling the team, the owner, Jody Allen.
Yes.
And so there could be Paul. Some. What? No. Sister of Paul. And he wrote it into his will that she would have to sell the team, and she just hasn't. So there's quite a lot of drama going on with the Blazers, especially with Neil O'Shea getting fired last year for some basically office misconduct. And then he sued the team because he thought that they used that to get out of his guaranteed contract.
Okay.
It's messy. It's messy in Portland. Also, I don't know if the team really fits. I'm a Blazers fan, so I could go on about this. But Anthony Simons and Lillard is kind of a weird backcourt, as much as I love both of them. It's kind of like Lillard and McCollum type in that sense that like you don't really know if it's going to be good. I don't know. Simons might become a sixth man for now until Lillard leaves. I don't really know.
They should start Jabari.
They should not start Jabari. They have Jeremy Grant. He's going to play the four.
What? Oh, never mind. I know who Jeremy Grant is. I was thinking
of
the Notre Dame guy.
Jerian Grant, his little brother. No, Jerian Grant sucks. And then Jamal Mosley is on the Magic head coach. That's kind of actually a fascinating job.
That's a weird team, man.
That's a very weird team. Their guards, Markelle Fultz and Jalen Suggs, cannot shoot. And they're going to be
both very fun.
They're very fun. Jalen Suggs is not very good.
He can shoot.
Well, I'll get to that. So it's like Fultz, who's injured, Suggs, who needs a lot of development, and then Cole Anthony needs some like mental development because he kind of plays for his own stats in a kind of a bad way. And those are the guards. And then they have one of the most fascinating front courts in the NBA, which is the 6'10" playmaking triumvirate of Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, and Wendell Carter, who they're all super skilled, and they're just running pick and rolls for each other. Like, they have two pick and roll point forwards on the team, and Banchero and Wagner. And then Carter's a really good playmaker. So it'll just be really fascinating to see how Mosley works with those guys.
Mm. Yes, okay. That was thorough.
Yeah, and then the last thing is that Evan Battey is playing in Bulgaria.
He is, and he posted about Tab Oil for National Coaches Day. I still love him, and I love how much he and Tab Oil love each other. Then, of course, Tab Oil at the media conference just waxed poetic about Evan Battey. When someone asks how to replace him, he just goes, "You can't." Like, what a heartbreak, dude.
Oh. Okay, well, I need to edit this article because I just found a couple typos.
Okay. Last thing, KenPom just released their
preseason rankings. I forgot.
And the AP Top 25 poll came out as we recorded. North Carolina number one, by the way.
Did they win? No, Kansas won. Who won?
Kansas won, but North Carolina number one because more things returning. Yeah, North Carolina number one, Gonzaga two, Houston three, Kentucky four, then you got Kansas. Top Pac-12 team is UCLA at 8. The next one is Arizona at 17. Next one is Oregon at 21, which seemed way too high. But whatever. And you got my boys Wyoming receiving votes as well. So there's your western side of the US stuff. And San Diego's ranked. San Diego State's ranked. So that just came out. And then KenPom, really quickly, I want to touch on this. I think this is the first year that CU is overrated by KenPom in a long time. CU is starting the year at 61 at KenPom.
That's not tournament territory, just to let you know.
Yeah, that still seems high. I would put CU in the 80s right now. I don't think CU is a tournament team.
Where did they end last year? That's not tournament. That's like NIT era.
I don't know if CU's an NIT team. They ended last year at 79.
Oh, shit.
Right. So I don't know what's going on. We lost Batty and Walker, and we're at 61. Okay. Projected record right now is 18-11 with 11-9 in conference, according to KenPom.
Yeah, that's bubble
caliber. Well, yeah. And projected defense rating right now is 37th in the country. We know what happens when Tad Boyle fills the top 50 KenPom defense. He goes to the tournament. So we'll see if that holds. But I think it's a little high. Don't you feel like it's a little high?
No, I'm just trying to think, like, what's in their projections?
I don't know.
Like, we don't have the great continuity that we had a couple of years ago. Is it like Gabadon and Ethan Wright? Are they making a big difference in this?
I don't know. I can't tell you.
Something...
Isn't that weird? We are 30 spots higher than CSU. Do you really think we're 30 teams better than CSU?
I don't. Okay. Who did we lose from last year?
Jabari Walker, Evan Batty.
And Keyshawn Barthelemy.
Keyshawn Barthelemy.
And Elijah Parquet, who barely played.
And Elijah Parquet.
Is it like that? Was there the advanced stats? Like KJ's offensive units were that much better than Keyshawn's?
Looking back at last year, our best player far and away, according to the advanced stats, was Jabari Walker.
No, I understand that.
And then KJ Simpson was second.
Okay.
Evan Batty was third. Hammond. Keyshawn was fourth.
Oh, interesting.
And then we go De Silva, Clifford, Hammond, Lovering.
Huh. Does it have our projected starters? I can't see it because you're logged into our shared account.
It does not have projected starters. Isn't that crazy? That feels super high to me. I was blown away by how they thought that. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I'm underrating CU, but I do not see that for CU this year. This is not – rebuilding is not the right word. CU's still going to win more than they lose, but CU is a year away, I think.
Hmm.
If Walker stayed, this would have been incredible.
Tournament team. Yeah.
But CU's a year away, especially with this how this recruiting class is looking coming up, right? CU's going to sign a top 30 recruiting class at worst, right? CU's the opportunity to sign a top 15 recruiting class if the right things go their way.
I see it.
I don't think that'll happen, but like – yeah, next year I think it's CU's year. So being 61 this year is great. And that Tennessee game, November 13th in Nashville, is going to be a huge test. Tennessee is incredible.
Are all the Pac-12 teams a little high? Oregon 29, USC 36.
I don't think Stanford, I think that's fine. Stanford 58 seems. Whoa, you're right. Utah 72. Wait. What?
Yeah.
Washington 113.
They used to be much lower.
Cal 146? You cannot convince me to Cal the top half team in the country. All right, let's not
Oregon
go down
State 228.
Let's not go down the
sorry, I mentioned Oregon State basketball, so that means the podcast is over.
Yep, that's the killed word. All right, I'm done.
I'm done.
Cool. See ya.
Buzz! 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 Buzz!